With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hello and welcome to Seriously, the podcast from the New Statesman that takes pop culture seriously.
I'm Caroline Crampton.
And I'm Anna Leskovich.
This week, we're going to be talking about the new Kesha album, Rainbow, and the BBC Three sketch show, Coconut.
We've also read Leanne Shapton's memoir, Swimming Studies, for the first time, so we'll be talking about how that went later in the show. Hello.
Hello.
Welcome back to another episode of Seriously. I just got back from Helsinki, which was very exciting.
Which is in Finland, right?
It is in Finland.
Okay, good.
I think it's the capital of Finland. It's definitely the biggest, like, most popular city in Finland. It could be one of those countries that has a weird pretend capital. But yeah, it was great. I was actually there for a music festival called Flow Festival, which I hadn't really heard of before. But it's a music festival right in the centre of Helsinki. It's on an abandoned, not abandoned, but a former power plant on the grounds of that. So it's like all concrete, no grass, which means no mud when it rains, which is great.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. And it was actually really, really fun. So the headliners were like Lana Del Rey, Frank Ocean, The XX, people like that. And I actually had a really, really good time. I also saw one of my favourite singers, Angel Olsen, and she was amazing. So yeah, it was just so fun, and I really can't recommend Helsinki enough as like a place.
Yeah, it looked great on your Instagram, and I have to say, everyone who schleps over to Barcelona for Primavera and stuff, yeah. I thought, maybe this Helsinki thing is a just as affordable but nicer option.
Yeah, I think some of the acts definitely did Primavera, and I know the XX did. Did Frank Ocean? I think maybe he was meant to, and he dropped out. I think maybe. And there's also like a bunch of festivals like that in Scandinavia. I know there's one in Oslo in Norway which had a lot of the same artists and was just a few days before, so I definitely think maybe Scandinavia is a good alternative to the Mediterranean Western European music festivals, because I went to Benicassim, which is just outside Barcelona, for a music festival years ago, and it was so hot that I like fainted three times. Which is like, I mean, that's a very me problem to have, because I'm like a fainter, famously. Yeah, I fainted during Arctic Monkeys and got put in this little tent, and I'm like such a secret massive Arctic Monkeys stan, and I was like desperately upset. This was a lot more my speed. It was a good time. So yeah, everyone go to Helsinki. It's great. It's the best.
Yeah, it sounds great. Well, while you've been in Finland, I've been putting all my stuff in boxes and moving it from one end of the country to the other.
Ugh.
So I have now officially moved.
Amazing. How do you feel?
I feel mostly stressed about having to unpack, but otherwise good.
Unpacking, though, it can be a treat when you like have your life like way more organized than it was before.
That's true. I am quite excited about the possibility of greater organization.
Mm.
I have had to send my boyfriend off to work because he kept trying to help.
Oh no. How dare he. Have you thought about Marieing your stuff, the Marie Kondo method?
Oh, I'm way into that.
Okay,
yeah,
cool.
Very, very into that. I love rolling up the t-shirts.
Have you been thinking about where the stuff sparks joy this whole unpacking time?
Oh yeah, I've already made a huge heap of stuff that's going to charity. It's great. It's going to be very cleansing.
Amazing. Well, Godspeed with your quest.
Yeah, well, before we crack on into the rest of today's episode, we should also just flag there are still tickets available for Game of Thrones Thrones quiz on the 12th of September. Woo-hoo. And live episode at the London Podcast Festival on the 17th of September.
What a week.
And I should also say, on the 17th, I am doing a kind of extra workshop-y thing after we've done our live episode. I may or may not drag Anna into this. I haven't decided yet. Or, in fact, asked her. But yeah, I'm doing a little workshop with, I think it's only about 30, 35 people on, if you have a podcast, how to promote it on social media.
That's cool.
So if you are interested in that, you can get tickets, same link as for the rest of it, seriouslypod.com/London Podfest.
Great. Well, I'm so excited. What a week of Seriously events that will be.
Mm.
Rolling on with the show, the first thing we're going to talk about this week is Rainbow, which is the new album from Kesha. It was released on August 11th and is her third studio album. The release of Rainbow marks Kesha's first substantial music release since she got embroiled in a legal dispute with her producer and alleged abuser, Dr. Luke. So it's a big release for Kesha fans. I feel like there's been a lot of, not necessarily hype, but media interest in this album in the coming weeks towards its release.
Yeah, I feel like there's been so much interest in the case, obviously, because I think it's a fairly unique situation. Mm. An artist suing a longtime producer and supposed mentor for abuse, sexual assault, but also because she wants out of the recording contract that forces them to be in continued contact.
Mm.
So yeah, lots of interest in like the legal point. And then also there was this big question mark over whether Kesha could make music at all while this was going on, right?
Yeah, totally. And she tried to make new music with a new band, and she wasn't allowed to do that, so she's had to continue. This is still released via Sony, so Dr. Luke does still have some sort of hypothetical involvement, I think, but has not actually produced this record or been involved with the production of it.
Yeah, it's unclear how much he's been involved in. I read one story that said that he intends to pursue her via the courts for money relating to it or something. So the legal thing drags on and becomes more and more complicated.
It's also been particularly complicated, I think, because she sued him and then he countersued her. So there's like a whole bunch of different disputes going on, all under the same umbrella, which it's just really complicated.
But meanwhile, we have this record. And one question I wanted to ask you right at the beginning is, do you think it's necessary to separate the music from all the media stories about Kesha, or can you sort of read the two together?
It's a hard question, because in an ideal world, you could be like, right, we're just going to take this record on its own terms and not worry about any of the surrounding context. But you also just can't. Like, we've already read all these stories. We already know about it. I mean, it would have been pretty impossible for me to try and listen to this in a vacuum, because there's just so much out there. I mean, it feels intentional, perhaps not, but a lot of the music on this record, it is commenting on and responding to that context for me. Like, there are references throughout the album to coming through struggles and praying for other people to find redemption and, you know, feeling broken and getting through it. All of that stuff for me feels, although always kept very vague, it does seem to me like it is commenting on that external context, so it would be pretty hard to separate it.
Yeah, and when the first single, Praying, came out, and which has an absolutely gorgeous video, mm. I think, the way people responded to it everywhere was, you know, this is a survivor's anthem.
Mm, totally.
People read very literally into the lyrics and the whole vibe of the thing that this was Kesha's response to her, you know, years-long fight to get away from her alleged abuser. Mm. And yeah, I think it's a beautiful song, especially if you do imbue it with that. I've just been thinking about this whole matter of sort of context and separating music from it, because I was trying to examine for myself, would I be paying this much attention to a Kesha album if this hadn't all happened? Maybe that's an academic question, because it has all happened.
Mm.
But I liked her kind of boozy, slightly rappy stuff a few years ago as much as the next person who enjoyed it when it came on,
yeah,
when you were dancing kind of thing. But I wasn't like invested in her as an artist in the way that maybe I am now.
Yeah, and I think people would not expect Kesha to necessarily produce powerful music until this situation happened. And she started to produce music that seemed to be commenting on it, that seemed to be empowering for women who have felt that they have been subjected to patriarchal, you know, violence or discrimination or whatever. And yeah, I think the expectations for the record have changed as a result. even if Kesha maybe does have, you know, powerful ballads and empowerment songs on some of her other records, they certainly weren't like part of her branding before or part of what you would seek out that record for. So definitely the context has changed people's expectations for the music. And there are lots of songs that kind of fit that bill. So you mentioned Praying, which is the lead single off the record, which is amazing. I think it like builds very well because Kesha doing a piano ballad could be quite boring, and that song just isn't boring at all. It's got a real punch to it because it does, you know, the text just increases as it goes along. You get more instruments coming in, the pace increases, and then you get this amazing like supernatural high note that she does towards the end. And it really, yeah, really packs a strong punch, that song. But there are others as well, like Rainbow, the title track. The opening track on the album is called Bastards, and it's kind of like a more acoustic, like fireside-y, sing-songy type thing. But it still kind of has that, like, don't let the bastards grind you down message to it, which, I do enjoy those songs, but they're not necessarily what you would expect Kesha to have made if you were thinking of her in 2009.
Yeah, definitely. My memory from that is weirdly tied up with an early episode of Glee. I don't know if you ever watched Glee that intensely, but
I did some of the earlier seasons.
It's one of the very first performances that the New Directions do. They do TikTok in a school assembly, and the headmaster announces it and goes, and now here we have the New Directions performing a song by K$ha.
Yeah.
And for some reason that really stuck in my memory as being the archetypal Kesha thing somehow. Also because one of the characters then vomits during the song, having drunk too much.
I'm really recalling that particular Glee performance. But that was, of course, the biggest selling single of 2009 worldwide. So it was absolutely massive. That's the one about, you know, before I leave, brush my teeth with a bottle of Jack and like Mick Jagger boys and, you know, wake up in the morning feeling like P. Diddy, all of that stuff. For me, the best bits on the new album are kind of like that. I really love Kesha's sillier side. You know, I think that she's got this really wicked sense of humour that I think made that song stand out from other party songs. TikTok, like the lyrics were just a bit like, wait, what did she just say? Like, that's quite weird.
Yeah.
In a way that, you know, is still really, really like party vibey and really, really like fun. I really liked Let 'Em Talk on this album, because for me it sounded like, you know, all the movies like in the early noughties that Lindsay Lohan was in, and at the end Lindsay Lohan would like with her pop rock band like sing some sort of like rocky cover of like a pop song. That's what that sounds like to me. That's what Let 'Em Talk sounds like. It sounds like Lindsay Lohan could be playing it at the end of the teen movie in the best possible way, you know.
What did you make of the slightly country-ish feel to some of it? Because I have to say I was less of a fan of those songs than I was of either the straight ballads or the more pop bangery type stuff.
So I feel like Hunt You Down is one of the ones you're thinking of there, which is the one where she's like, I never killed somebody, never buried a body, like that one. Sorry for my terrible singing. I thought that was great. I love that one. I mean, I don't know how much I would listen to it just for like, you know, its musical qualities, but the lyrics are really, really funny. And I like that she, despite having, you know, been put through all these allegations of basically being a crazy liar, you know, and being insane and blah, 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 I like that she can still really revel in that crazy girl persona she sort of had before. And that song is all about, yeah, being like so crazy in love that you'll like hunt your man down if he cheats on you. And, you know, there are lyrics in it that just say, yeah, like, I'm crazy, I'll do it. And I like that because it's so much fun. And it would be such a shame if that part of Kesha had to die because she was worried about how she would come across and like how that might affect her, you know, credibility and whatever. So for me, kind of like musical quality aside, there was something I just loved about that song.
Another one that I was not such a fan of, I have to say, is Boogie Feet. I listened to the album three times through straight and each time found myself wanting to skip that one.
Yeah. I wasn't convinced that, yeah, I agree.
But then on the other hand, there are some other absolutely amazing tracks. Like, I thought Hymn was really good.
Yeah.
The lyrics in that, I read a great piece by Ira Madison III where he opened his article basically saying that Kesha is trying to construct a new religion based on lived experience, and this is the evidence.
Wow, that's cool.
Which I thought was a really compelling argument.
Sounds like a great piece. Yeah, I liked the lyric in Hymn that said, I know that I'm perfect even though I'm fucked up. I thought that was a really nice lyric. And yeah, there are definitely moments like that that are great. I think my favourite one on the record was Woman.
Yes, well, that's got just a really catchy tune, hasn't it?
It's got a really catchy tune.
Like, fuck you vibe.
Yeah, totally. It's a real like empowerment ladies' night out song, which is obviously like such a canon in pop music. And I just thought it was so joyful, like that it was just all about fun, and it was all, you know, about, you know, women only spaces, there's no men involved, and I love that there's just like full-on like ridiculous laughter, like there's the vocal in it just has all this laughter, and it's full of swearing, you know, about being a motherfucking woman, and yeah, I loved it. I thought it was really, you know, Kesha at her best for me.
Yeah, so I'd say musically for me it's a slightly uneven album with some really high points in it, but also I feel like it's going to be for years to come a kind of pop culture artifact because of all that's happened. Kesha is now a kind of historic artist for reasons beyond her control, and this is the music she made while it was happening.
Yeah, it is totally a fascinating piece of work, and I just have so much respect for her, and I really respect A, that she's spoken up for herself like outside of a musical context, but B, how much of the old Kesha has survived in this album. That for me is a real triumph, that she's allowed herself to be as boozy and glittery and silly and crazy as she ever was, and I have so much respect for that.
And now performing the hit single Trick and also Talk by rapper Key Dollar Sign Ha, The New Directions.
Wake up in the morning feeling like P. Diddy. Grab my glasses, I'm out the door, I'm gonna hit this city. Before I leave, brush my teeth with a bottle of Jack. Cause when I leave for the night, I ain't coming back. I'm talking pedicure.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Now we're going to talk about Coconut, which is a BBC Three short-form mockumentary starring the YouTuber Humza Ahmed. He plays a young guy called Ahmed Armstrong trying to establish himself as, quote, a gentleman documentarian for a TV network called Pac Nation. It's very much in a mockumentary style. It's all single camera, and it's quite heavily satirising people on both the far left and the far right, I would say. It's quite, quote, political.
Yeah, it's definitely very political, and there's lots of conversations about Brexit Britain, and
yes,
the kind of central joke of the whole thing is that this guy, Ahmed, is trying really hard to align himself as, he wants people to see him as very thoroughly British. You know, he's from Pakistan, and he tries to do that by loving Katie Hopkins and loving, like, really, really right-wing, kind of aristocratic British stuff. And I think the title Coconut comes from that kind of slang term for someone who's like brown on the outside, white on the inside. So that's like the central joke of the show, that he's like aligning himself with white, right-wing, very like patriotic Brits. In the process, sometimes says like racist or like hurtful or just ill-informed, ignorant things. And he seems like quite genuinely mean to his colleagues as well.
Yeah, definitely. He's not, well, in the ones I've watched, I think I've watched three so far, they're only 7 minutes long. I have no sympathy for him whatsoever. And overall, I didn't have a great kind of sympathy with the show, actually. I wasn't really sure what it was trying to do. There was maybe only one moment where I felt there was some genuine tension or satire going on, which is when Ahmed goes to film a segment where he interviews an actual Brexit voting white person, and he asks her, so why did you vote to leave Europe? And she doesn't say anything. There's a really long pause, and then she goes, foreigners? And the point being that she's uncomfortable about saying that to someone she perceives as an actual foreigner, right, in person, in her face. And that I was like, yeah, fair, like that is a genuine piece of satire. But for the rest of it, I was like, this guy's just being a dick to people in a way that I don't really find funny.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's just because I don't have much experience of someone like Ahmed's character. Like, I don't know very many people who are like that, who, you know, are trying really, really hard to get on board with like really far right-wing Brexit policies. And maybe if I did, I would like find this more like relatable humor, and that's obviously a reflection of me, not the show. But I also felt that this show was a bit constrained by the format, and the mockumentary format has been around obviously for such a long time, and things like The Office changed the way that comedy functions so dramatically, and that was, you know, 20 years ago. And BBC Three at the moment has a real line in mockumentary, I feel like. So aside from Coconut, they've had People Just Do Nothing, they've had This Country, they've had things like Simon Amstel's veganism mockumentary, Carnage. And it's obviously just a line in British comedy that is still really flourishing, this kind of genre of like mockumentary, often with like quite difficult characters in there. Comedy for me really only works when people are likable or have a sympathetic streak in them. I like comedy where you can really kind of like feel warmth towards the character, and that's why I liked This Country so much, because even though they were silly and stupid characters, this is a BBC Three mockumentary set in like Gloucestershire, which we did recently. And those characters, even though they're like really doing stupid stuff all the time, you're really like rooting for them, and they feel very true to human experience in a very specific way. And I think sometimes mockumentary can go the other way and try and do stuff that's like, look at all these ridiculous comedy characters and go a bit too David Brent, if you know what I mean, because the bits of The Office UK I didn't like were the bits that were just like David Brent being horrible to everyone. I liked The Office because I liked kind of Tim, Dawn and Gareth, these other characters who were much more human. That's where Coconut falls down a little bit for me. And there was a piece in Vice in May this year that said, you know, like the mockumentary needs to die in order for British comedy to thrive, which isn't something that I necessarily believe, but it cited a lot of sort of current mockumentaries that feel quite tired and feel quite dated. And for me, Coconut might be one of them, even though there are obviously things about it that are new, like that it's got a like diverse cast of, you know, fun characters and so on. But for me, there was something about it that felt a little bit too David Brent.
Yeah, I agree. It does feel like those bits of The Office where it was just David Brent and you almost wanted to fast forward through to something else or skip, you know. I think they have made that cardinal sin of not making any of the characters likable, or maybe they are potentially likable but we never get towards that because each episode is only 7 minutes, and therefore the potential to develop any kind of rapport with them is so difficult, so limited.
I think that's really true as well. The length of the episodes, while an interesting decision from BBC Three, because Hamza Ahmed, who is who plays the lead and I think wrote most of Coconut, he is a YouTuber who did a web series called Diary of a Bad Man that had like, you know, his early Diary of a Bad Man videos from like 2011 have like 5 million views plus. Mm. So, you know, he's obviously really got talent and really tapped into something. And I think actually, although he's made this web series before that is, you know, much shorter, I think maybe these would have been better if they had been slightly longer and they had a bit more room to move around in, and, you know, you had more time with the characters, as you say.
Yeah, I'm so interested at the moment in this whole like YouTube to TV pipeline that people are trying to develop. You know, we talked about a few episodes that Fantasies thing, which is a attempt to sort of dramatize fan fiction starring about YouTubers starring YouTubers.
We didn't like it,
and we're not fans of this either. And I wonder, if part of the problem is that rather than looking at a YouTuber and going, well, they've got an amazing audience and they're a really talented on-screen presence, what can we put them in that takes advantage of that? Rather, producers go, what can we make that's almost like YouTube, not on YouTube, i.e. on our platform?
How can we make this internet friendly? How can we make which is maybe the wrong approach.
There's a documentary that was, I've completely forgotten the name of the woman who presented it, but there's a documentary that's been on iPlayer for a while that's called The Truth About Clean Eating or something like that. Mm-hmm. And that's presented by a YouTuber who is a kind of body positivity and health vlogger. So rather than getting her to make a web series, they were like, would you like to present a documentary about these issues that you are very knowledgeable about? And she did a really good job.
Yeah,
so I wonder if that's more the way of getting these people kind of more onto mainstream platforms without making cringy stuff like this.
There were things I liked about this as well. I really like the character of, is it Camilla, who's Ahmed's wife? He's essentially married her for a British passport is the joke. But she's like really into fashion and she like seems like a bit of an airhead and she like just got her job at Pac Nation because he gave it to her after they got married. And but there's something, you get a sense that there's more to her than appears on the surface, but found her really, really funny. And so there are definitely like moments of great writing there. They're just not being shown off in the way that they could be, I think. And I think part of the problem with that is just the tiredness of the format.
Yeah, I do wish actually that maybe they'd commissioned a like the half hour sitcom from Humza Ahmed, maybe in a more conventional style, and give him like 30 minutes, six episodes to explore, because I think that could have worked.
But yeah, I find it really interesting to see BBC Three like pushing so many of these mockumentaries of, I think, quite varied quality. And you do occasionally get one that's really good. But I'm interested to see how long that lasts, because I don't know. But anyway, yeah, if you think it's the kind of thing that you might be interested in, definitely check it out and share your thoughts. We'd love to hear other people's thoughts on this as well, because it's just good to get that range of opinion. So do email us with your thoughts on Coconut if you've seen it and loved it. Or hated it, just get in touch. seriouslypod@gmail.com. So, on to the recommends. It wasn't last week, it was actually a few weeks ago that we said we would do Swimming Studies by Leanne Shapton, which is a kind of memoir about swimming, but Shapton's an artist, so it's interspersed with all these, you know, nice sort of paintings and drawings. It's about Shapton's experience of basically training to be an Olympic level swimmer when she was younger. She was at one point ranked 8th nationally for Canada. It's kind of about that experience of being a teenager who is just basically training constantly and what her relationship with that was like. It's a lovely book. The way that she goes into it is not like, oh, this is how I felt about spending this much time away from my friends and family. It's much more about like, this is how it felt to have this relationship with a swimming pool and this relationship with my body, and, you know, little very precise specific details of her memories of doing it, which for me is a great way of writing, because as someone who obviously has no experience of being an Olympic level swimmer, it's great to hear those little kind of tidbits that you wouldn't necessarily expect, like her talking about putting ice on the back of her knee until the back of her knee goes numb and stuff. That kind of thing is just something I would never even think about.
Yeah, I found it brilliant for that reason as well, that I learned so much about the technicalities of swimming, while at the same time, I feel like understanding how she specifically felt about it. And there's also so much lovely writing about water and how it feels to be in water and wanting to be in water, which is really, really beautiful. I feel like a lot of it's written in the present tense as well, isn't it? It's like in fragments.
Yeah.
Very immediate. You feel not like this is someone looking back on their teenage years. This is someone reliving them for you on the page, which is a very hard technique to pull off, but very clever.
And I think you can tell that this is done by a visual artist, because, or not even visual, but an artist, because it feels a lot more like sketches. And that's why it's called swimming studies, I guess, because it's like when you do loads of studies for a big painting and you paint sort of the same thing over and over and you get like a real sense of the detail of that subject. And that's basically what she's gone for here. I've got a couple of quotes that kind of illustrate that. So I really liked this bit where she talks about a swimmer mid-race kind of coming up and down through the water. And she says, as her head breaks the surface, the roar of the crowd is, with each breath, loud then quiet, a chorus of warbled pops and splashings burst against the sides of her cap. So it's really that kind of like level of feeling and what it actually feels like to be mid-race and be in the water. And it's a much better way of getting you right into the action of it. I don't know. I really appreciated the precision of her writing, definitely.
Yeah, there's another bit I really liked where she talks about athletes' relationship with pain, where she says there's two different kinds of pain. There's the kind of pain that you feel constantly all the time because you're pushing your body to its limit every single day and you don't ever stop to rest. And then there's the kind of pain that you actually have to worry about where you can't get in the pool because your knees bust, that kind of thing. And as someone who's never, ever been remotely sporty or tried hard at anything physical, so I didn't realize that you were just always in pain. That's worth
it's
knowing.
So interesting.
I'm gonna think about that next time I watch, like, you know, the World Athletics Championships have just been on in London and stuff, so there's been like more visibility for that sport. And I was like, so you guys, your legs all just really hurt all the time then? Cool.
Yeah, cannot relate, I have to say. I really liked as well her talking about how her relationship with other things change, like her relationship with food seems quite specific in that context, because, you know, like a swimmer's diet is like full of carbs and stuff, and she's like really into these kinds of like donuts and things. That there's like lovely writing about, you know, the nostalgia she feels for these kind of very specific brand of donuts or whatever that they all used to eat in the pool and that kind of thing. And also even things like her relationship with time is different as a swimmer. There's a whole bit where she talks about, you know, everything is measured in like hundredths and tenths of seconds, and that's just a completely different relationship with time to have. She says of like drills and things, time passes with precision in a workout. Every minute, every second is felt and accounted for. In other words, time passes slowly. And then she says, I'm surprised to find then, watching practice from the deck, that it passes quickly. So that's like when she's back as an adult watching other people swim, she like can enjoy watching the workout like you would watch a TV show, and it just kind of drifts by and passes quite quickly. And it's that completely different relationship with time and different perspective on the workout. Yeah, I don't know. I just find that a really interesting thing, because you wouldn't expect a hobby to change your literal conception of like how time passes. And yet for Shapton, it has. And that's the kind of detail that I really liked. I have to say, sometimes it got too detailed for me in that there were details about like just the way that swimming works that I'm like not that interested as some, I don't know, I love swimming. And as I said earlier in the podcast, I've been in Helsinki this week and I was like swimming in the sea, in the Baltic Sea, which was really cold and really, really amazing. And so I do love talking about swimming, but there are like details, like, for example, here she says in brackets, some Olympic standard pools have 10 lanes, but the races only use the middle 8 of those 10. And you're like, that's a detail that I don't really care for. It doesn't give me an insight into your life. That's just like, I don't know, like boring swimming pool fact that I'm not so super hyped by. But I understand that it's sometimes important for the narrative as a whole for her to have that level of detail. So,
yeah, I don't know. I felt it added to the whole picture. I did really like the visual elements of this book as well, though. So there's a series of photographs in the middle of like swimming costumes that she'd had and little notes about where she bought them and where she wore them and what they were for. And they're a mixture of, you know, this is the costume I used to wear for racing in. This is a like nice bikini that I bought at a vintage store to go on holiday with. And it really gives you that sense of swimming as part of her life, as something that she does everywhere. Wherever she goes, she will get in the hotel pool and see what it's like. So that I felt was an unconventional way of conveying that. And then also there's some there's some nice paintings as well of her fellow swimmers and little salient facts about them based on these watercolours that I liked as well.
Those swimsuits are so interesting, you're right, because it's almost like a museum artefact. They're sort of put on models, they're not like on her.
No, they're posed, aren't they, on mannequins?
Yeah, it's like a museum exhibition, and it's a way of like cataloguing your life in a way that's really interesting. I like seeing kind of emotional things presented as, I don't know, like cultural artifacts or like factual things. Mm. It's a really nice way to get into kind of like the history of her as a person and her life. And there are other lovely eccentric bits that I liked. Like there's a bit called 14 Odors, where there's kind of like a splash of colour on the page that I guess is kind of like a synesthetic imagining of, you know, visualising the colours of those smells and then the descriptions of what the smells are. And I do think swimming is something, like, we all remember the smell of our local swimming pool when we were growing up, or the smell of, like, having chlorine in your hair afterwards, or... And they do say smell is the sense that takes you back into your memories the most, if that makes sense. Like, if you smell a really specific food that you used to grow up with, you're suddenly back there. That some of the ones that she's gone for are teammate's hair, wrist beneath watch strap, wet team towel, ladies' locker room toilet stall, and then she, like, describes all the different smells kind of involved. And yeah, that, it's just a lovely way to kind of like get into a particular person's experience. It's amazing.
Yeah, I'd say as a memoir it does that better than most other that I've read, in terms of sinking you directly into someone else's experience, as you say, sometimes in too detailed a way, but you can't fault it for kind of putting you somewhere else and having you look through someone else's eyes.
Yeah, and it's really interesting to me to read stuff by people who work predominantly in another medium. So she is predominantly like an artist. A friend gave me another one of her books. It's called like Native Trees of Canada. And it's just like all the different leaves and stuff of different trees in her style. It's really nice. And I think, yeah, you can, even though sometimes the writing in this is maybe not as like, I don't know, like not quite as clear or poetic or, you know, as kind of perfect as like if we were reading this book by a novelist might be, like, it's, you can kind of tell that it's not her primary art form, but I don't mind, because it kind of becomes quite interesting as a result, even if sometimes it feels a bit rough around the edges and like there's maybe like a better way of expressing what she's talking about. It's just, yeah, it's just so unique, so I really, really like that.
Yeah, we should say thank you very much to Seriously Listener Isabel Greenberg for the original recommendation. I definitely wouldn't have read this without that.
Yeah. So what about next week? What are we doing then?
For next week, we are going to listen to an album. Philippa has emailed in to say, long-time listener, approx fourth-time emailer. Very precise, I like it. I don't know if you're interested in music for your recommend segment. We definitely are, but I've just happened upon an album that I think you might enjoy. It's called No Shape and is by a queer artist called Perfume Genius. It's twinkling and explosive and gives me all the feels. Knowing that you like Lorde makes me think that you might like it. So we are going to give that a go for next week.
Well, full confession, I do already know this album and I do really like this album. So this is maybe a recommend mostly for you. But I'm confident you'll enjoy it.
I've heard the episode of Song Exploder with Perfume Genius.
Oh, I didn't even know there was one.
Yeah, it was really recent.
Oh, I'll check that out.
That made me really want to check out the whole album, and then I didn't get round to it. So this is a very good nudge for me to do that.
Okay, cool. Yeah, well, you listen to the album, I'll listen to the Song Exploder. How about that?
Okay, let's do it.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Seriously, the pop culture podcast from The New Statesman.
On seriouslypod.com, you'll find all our back episodes, including our specials on Harry Potter, Love Actually and Friends.
We're also available many other places on the internet, including on Twitter, Facebook and Tumblr. We're Seriously Pod on all of them.
We love getting your recommendations for things we should feature on the show, or just hearing your thoughts on what we've discussed. Get in touch on social media or email us on seriouslypod@gmail.com.
If you've really enjoyed the episode, why not go to iTunes and give it a rating and a review? It helps other people find the show.
And if you feel strongly that more pop culture needs to be taken seriously, spread the word and tell your friends and family about the podcast.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.